What more do you want from me?
Yeah. We're back with another episode of Office Hours with your good brother, Professor Carl Tone Jones. And you know what it is. Like Sonny said, now you just can't leave. So we're here, breaking it down live from the 215. And, you know, tonight's show is going to be a little different, man. First and foremost, man, let me welcome everybody. Welcome to the family. Appreciate you pulling up tonight and rocking out on Philly Fridays with your brother, Professor Carl Tone Jones. Live on FetLifeStation.com. You can also find us streaming on most of your streaming platforms at True Crime Radio Stories. At True Crime Radio Stories, okay? So y'all make sure y'all look for us and and check us out, man, as we get things popping. You know, temperature is currently 49 degrees. And we got a little late start. We're about 8 minutes after the hour. But that's all right. You know, it's been an interesting week, right? And, well, first of all, shout out to Black History Month, in case anybody didn't know. And, you know, something that seems to keep, that we need to seem to keep repeating, is that Black History Month was not given to us because it was the shortest month of the year. Black History Month was actually chosen by the good brothers of Omega Psi Phi Incorporated from Chicago University. And I believe they started celebrating in 1924 with Dr. Carter G. Woodson, who was part of the Omega Psi Phi fraternity and a student at Chicago University, decided to take it nationally. And it started off as Negro History Week. The week was chosen due to the birthdays of both one Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln, which fell in the second week of February. So the second week of February can be attributed to the start of what later became Black History Month. So at the Community College of Philadelphia, I was asked to do a presentation on, you know, for Black History Month. And my presentation was about the miseducation of the Negro, who it should be mandatory reading. So if you've never read it, it is even available on Audible. So you can get the audio book, and listen to the work manifested by one Dr. Carter G. Woodson, and understand the reason and the purpose behind his work. I think it's very important to, you know, and it took me back to my scholastic days when I was teaching and doing presentations. I was a little rusty, I'm not going to lie. And it was a hell of a week, and I'm going to get into that a little later on in the show. Not just a hell of a week, it's been busy. You know, it's one thing when you work hard, but, you know, working hard is sometimes, you know, you have to also value, you know, your time, you know, the time you have for yourself. So, but it was an interesting presentation nevertheless. And I knew that I was going to run out of time because I reread the book, and in the process of rereading the book, I got new volumes. I got volumes of notes. That's what I do, you know. I mean, y'all know me on here, and I'm talking about the issues concerning the community, and just happened to stumble upon the latest issue, you know, you want to call it the gender divide. I call it the gender dysfunction of the black community, or the sexual dysfunction of the black community. And we typically talk a lot about that. And I think that's starting to run its course, because I don't really think you can really talk too much more about it. You can provide examples about it, but at the end of the day, you know, you're promoting low hanging fruit, you know, low vibrational behaviors that seems to have taken center stage. And so nobody really wants to own up to their part in it. And like I've always said, at least what I can see from the men, we will somewhat hold each other accountable. I'm not saying we're batting 1,000, but you know, we can make an all-star team if we're playing a season of baseball. Ladies, y'all have some work to do in that area. And I will continue to say that part, because the self and personal accountability, everything cannot be somebody else's fault. At some point, you have to accept your role and responsibilities in terms of how things got to where they are. But nevertheless, I digress, because that also falls in line with the understanding of being miseducated. And Dr. Carter G. Woodson, people don't know, Dr. Woodson also wrote a book about 15 years prior. You know, he almost wrote a book about 15 years prior, talking about the education of the Negro, you know, from slavery up to 1861. And he wrote a volume book. He wrote nearly 50 books, had his own printing press, and was the executive editor, you know, for the Negro World. That was the primary newsletter that was passed around and sent out from the UNIA under the leadership of Marcus Garvey at that particular time. And he also had many ties, some ties here in Philadelphia that we can talk about. But what we gained mostly from understanding the miseducation of the Negro is that we are not properly trained or educated to educate black people. Because if you're trying to, if the purpose of education is to improve the conditions of the people by educating them, not just scholarship, not just to be able to win trivia, you know, awards and prizes, not to be able to answer the final question on Jeopardy, but purpose to create and instill institutions that see to the proliferation of your people. And I found that to be most sobering, because it's been a few years since I've read the book. And I actually bought volumes of the book, and I used to, you know, when I used to sell my books and DVDs, it would always be on the table, and I would make it very affordable for people who wanted to watch, who wanted to read about Dr. Carter G. Woodson's greatest work, in my opinion. And so that was a monumental, you know, event this week. And it took a lot out of me, I'm not going to lie. You know, a lot of people don't understand that when you do this work, it can be exhausting. Because not only do you do this work, you know, you have to still deal with day-to-day life. That doesn't slow down. And, you know, I'm a one-man army when it comes to a lot of things. So it takes a lot out of you to do extracurricular work. But I definitely appreciated the assignment from my big sister, Genevieve Weaver, and putting this process together and putting that project together. And I was glad that I have received such positive feedback, because I thought that, you know, had it gone the way I would, I'd probably be looking for a job. You know, the way I talk, because I'm very unapologetic when you start talking about issues of black nationalism, you know, addressing the institution of white supremacy, and those who continue to support and propel the institution of white supremacy, because they're working hands in that model. So to address it, was something that I like to do beforehand, because I'm unapologetically black, unapologetically African when it comes to, you know, my status in this world. I make no qualms about it, and being unapologetic, I make no apologies about it. And if it offends anybody, that's on them. So, you know, I'm speaking to this because there were some things I wanted to expound upon, but I ran out of time, and I knew I was going to run out of time. I had a whole hour and some change, and I still ran out of time because there were some things I wanted to dig into, but that's just how deep the subject matter is, especially when you care about the topic. You know, black people gave up a lot in this country. We're never really given anything. Worked hard for everything we received, and some things we had to take, just like Black History Month. But then there were other things that we reached and we achieved, but the miseducation of us didn't allow us to have the common sense to keep it. So we would prefer, instead of having our Major League Baseball teams, you know, the Negro Leagues, which were better than what Major League Baseball was putting out, had a greater fan turnout, greater support from the community, and it also infused the economies of the cities that had Negro League teams. Those neighborhoods were thriving. We still have evidence of the roots that were planted. We had one, I can't recall the name quite. I'm so embarrassed. I can't recall the name of the Philadelphia team, but it was located at, they played at the 21st and Lehigh. That field is still there. And then you go down 22nd Street. In 22nd Street, you know, rivals 52nd Street in Philadelphia in terms of the most black owned businesses on a particular strip in the city. Not even Uptown has a strip where more black owned businesses are actually, you know, control a particular strip in the city. That can be attributed to the foundation led by, you know, one of our teams that played in the Negro Leagues and saw the need, the miseducation convinced us that it was better to go through the back doors of the prejudiced, segregated Major League Baseball systems and teams, for which Philadelphia was the worst. If you read the history books, Philadelphia was the most racist city in the country when it came to accepting Major League Baseball players who are black. They all have terrible tales to tell about their time here in Philadelphia. But that's going through the back door. That's what Dr. Carter G. Woodson was talking about. That if you control a man's mind, you don't have to worry about him stepping out of line. He will always know his place in your society. And when introduced to an establishment, he will seek the back door. And if there's no back door there, he will construct a back door because he knows his place in your society. And that can only be accomplished if you're miseducated and you're uneducated about your history, your culture, the contributions your people made to the world. You know, he said, a people without knowledge of its history and a people without knowledge of themselves and their traditions will be seen as obsolete. And thus, those people who are seen as obsolete can be exterminated. And you look at the condition, you look at the imagery of black people, and you look at what's happening around the world. And that's what you have to understand. Like when Kevin Samuels was talking about the public image of black men, he was speaking to something that was far deeper than most people can comprehend. Because your public image protects you internationally from being assaulted, from being dismissed, for being seen as unhuman, or just being seen as less than, which doesn't allow for genocide to take place It's a buffer. But you have to understand that you have to be a high level thinker to even be able to comprehend what that means and what that looks like. So, you know, I spent a lot of time on that. And it's funny, right? Because right now you have, and one of the things that Dr. Woodson talked about, and he and W.E.B. Du Bois actually shared this sentiment, was the violations of the Talented Tenth, the Black Bootleg, Sigma Pi Phi, you know, the Keepers of the Urn, the people who became, who were supposed to be the leaders of the community, the ones that were supposed to come back to the community after it attained resources and education and so forth. And then they were supposed to teach the 90% and help lift them out of, you know, perpetuality. Having one of those moments. Shit, I'm a, trying to get it out. You know, so, but leading us from being the dregs of society, permanent underclass, permanent underbelly of society. Since my lips won't let me say the words I want to say tonight. And it speaks to, you know, something that, and they were both chastised heavily, you know, in 1933 by W.E.B. Du Bois and, you know, the release of the Miseducation of the Negro, which really was a tongue lashing to the Black elite class. For which, because he originally, like I told you, he wrote The Education of the Negro maybe about 15 years prior. So, yeah. And then you had W.E.B. Du Bois, you know, chastise the Talented Tenth, the Black Bootleg, on his way out of America. You know, I believe he ended up and patriated himself to Ghana, for which he spent the rest of his life, the rest of his days. And it's funny because all that stuff is coming up right now, but we don't recognize it because we're very ignorant of our history. So we have the Shannon Sharp, former NFL great, tight end with the Denver Broncos, the Baltimore Ravens, Super Bowl winning champion. And did I mention Hall of Famer? All right. He has he was known to be on talk shows on ESPN. And he later, you know, he left ESPN in sort of a controversial matter with a very disrespectful co-host, for which, you know, he already recognized certain things. So, but anyway, he started a podcast called Club Shay Shay. And he has literally, you know, I believe it was like, I don't know if it was even a year ago he started this podcast, but it's been blowing up. And recently, you know, his last two interviews with Cat Williams and Monique have literally broke the internet. I'm talking. And so right now, you know, his algorithm is definitely popping. And it's a lot of, it's bringing a lot of contention because as people say, there's a lot of tea being spilled in regards to the ongoings and the shenanigans of Hollywood. And, you know, I'm really not with the messy stuff. I'm really not. And so for the most part, you know, I'm not, it's not the type of thing that I'm into. I still have not watched the entire Cat Williams interview. I just seen clips. And I started watching the Monique interview. And I understand these are some, you know, hurt brothers and sisters, you know, because, you know, they feel as though they've been dealt wrong and they didn't have a chance to tell their side because their side has been dismissed for several years. So this has pretty much been the first time they've been, you know, uncensored in speaking their truth, whatever that is, speaking their version of the truth. And, you know, everybody has a side. You know, you say there's three sides to a story. There's, you know, my side, your side, and then there's the truth. And only God knows, really, right? So, but the one thing I'm really elated that it revealed, it was this thing about this aristocrat class of Black people who actually, you know, we're going back to the Talented Tenth now. This aristocrat class of black people who themselves have become the gatekeepers to black success. And also, these are the ones who sort of buffer and create a buffer that that doesn't allow other black peoples to attain similar or the same success. In other words, it's not shared. We've been saying this for time and time again. Those of us who are historians, those of us who are black nationalists, Pan-Africanists even, those of us who identified as being conscious, have been saying that this element in society exists. And we've been saying it exists for a long time. And one of the things that we have to consistently fight is all the people saying, well, can you prove it? Who are they? And this class is typically anonymous, invisible. You don't know who they are. But the thing about Hollywood is that all of these people, they're visible. So now you can see the mechanisms that are in place behind the clock. And when I tell you that you're starting to see, you know, the corkscrews, you're starting to see the sprockets, you're starting to see the cogs and the wheels turning. This is a, you know, in my opinion, you know, unforeseen blessing in disguise. Because, you know, like I said, I'm not with the messiness. I'm not with that because I think it's lowbrow. But when you have people talking about people who you consider who are considered to be moguls, and even they all answer to somebody, especially black entertainers, they all answer to somebody, and that person is not black. It gives you some insight into how that can transform. So now we're not talking entertainment no more. Now we may be talking politics. Now we might be talking social economics. Now we might be talking the business classes. Now we might be talking the academic circles and the ivory towers that many people, you know, dismiss the rest of the community based upon. These are things that was also talked about in the miseducation of the Negro. And how the contentment that those bourgeois Negroes have for the rest of the black community puts them in the very precarious place. They hate white folk because their status has not elevated them to white folk status. And they hate black people, regular black folk, because of the disdain they personally have for being black. And this miseducation goes down, so you have those black people who lose hope. And now they no longer want to do jobs, want to perform in duties that will build their communities. Now they want jobs just to get by so they can get high, live a high life. So instead of seeking building something constructive, something that leads to proliferation of your community, most people now only seek entertainment themselves, only seek leisure themselves. Their life has to be a fluffy life. We're headed for some hard times, family, and we're already in it for the most part. You know? And so, when you think about it, it's just exhausting. It's very tiresome. And when you're seen as a leader, and those of us who accept the mantle, because some way, some short form. Now, if you want to call me the leader of a movement, I'm rejecting that every day of the week. Every day. You won't put that on me. There's too many times I'm walking around like,
what more do you want from me?
And that's a sincere thing. And so, and that's an interesting segue, right? Because like I said, it's been a really, really long week. And so, you know, I wanna talk on something real quick, and I want to speak to it because it's something that needs to be said. And many of you have heard this sound bite on my show before, but you haven't heard it at its you haven't heard the entire sound bite. You've only heard a 1 minute clip, but it actually goes a little longer than that. So here's a sound bite from one Kevin Samuels, and I want y'all to hear this and please pay close attention to it, because he speaks some serious truth here.
You can hear the brothers, they tired. Men get tired. We get tired. God, we get tired. And don't nobody give a damn. The folks you think could give a damn don't give a damn. Sometimes your kids don't even give a damn. And in the face of such hurt, heartbreak, rejection, confusion, a lot of men are just out here lost. And waking up every day is a miracle. Some people go to sleep and will be all right with not waking up. They don't want to admit it. They don't want to admit it. Don't want to admit that every day is just torture. Torture of an unfulfilled heart, an empty soul, and just the life that's vacuous and seems devoid of meaning. But you know,
and you know, that is it's unfortunate that many of us carry that and share that. And if you ever check the comment sections out, you know, for which I'm going to do, you know, briefly, I'm just going to go through the comments in that particular clip, because, you know, here's one comment. This resonates in such a way. Another comment with teary faces, teary faced emojis. Man, this hit home. And you know, we can go on, you know, because that's not the only place you'll find those comments. And being a man, especially being a black man, could be such a thankless endeavor. And many people don't really understand, you know, what it takes to be a black man, because the assumption is that black men are as other men, which is, you know, a false assumption. The comparisons are false equivalencies. It's like playing Uno. And you have all these cards, and they're one color. And they're three different numbers, but you got all the same colors. And at no time in the game do you ever get to throw a card down, because everybody else has the colors. Everybody else has the skip cards. Everybody else is making you draw two. Everybody else is making you draw four. And then when you have the right color and it's your turn, right before you, somebody puts a wild card down and changes the color. That is what it's like to be a black man. And we get so freaking tired of everybody else telling us to suck it up. What do you think we've been doing for all of this time? What do you think we've been doing? Do you know the emotional labor that black men carry is one of the biggest reasons that black men don't live as long as other groups of men? that we are not allowed. The sister once told me, I had played a video, and it was a white guy who had, you know, to his credit, had broken down some topic in regards to the relationship between men and women. And her response was, I've never heard a black man say those things. To which my response was, have you ever heard a black man say, get 2 seconds into anything without being cut off by a black woman? And it's not even the women, that just the women that have contempt for us. You know, I want y'all to hear something else, right? Let me see if I have this queued up. Because, and God rest his soul, Kevin Samuels, man, he died way too young. But that's a story that we're very comfortable with. That's a story that we're so used to. It's to the point now where black men gets in his 50s. Death is inevitable. And it's something that we are very okay with. All right. So hold tight, man. I want y'all to hear this one right here. Stop the music for a second. Because I want y'all to hear this one. This joint right here. Let me see if I can pop this up.
Master is saying no. I can always come back to say yes. But when I say...
You once said when a man says he's tired, pay attention. Mm-hmm. Expound on that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean... The suicide rate amongst men, we're 3 to 4 times as likely to die by suicide than our women. 9 out of 10 people who live to be over 100 are women. Over 70% of homicides are by men in the United States. So long we tell each other, we give each other power. Say, stay strong, brother.
Mm-hmm.
Subconsciously, that's telling us when we're weak, we're not a man. You can't stay strong.
Mm-hmm.
I can just put the bar, a 45-pound Olympic, tell you to hold an Olympic bar out on the bench press. So I want you to hold that till tomorrow. You won't. We have to be careful of the misleading mantras that we say. You know, what doesn't kill you can only make you stronger. That's not true. Or everything in moderation. No, less than an ounce of cyanide will kill you. So we have to be careful how we program ourselves. So when a man is tired, a strong man is tired. When I say believe him, what I mean is welcome him to rest. Allow him to decompress. You're tired, brother. What do you need from me? I don't need to ask you to do something else. You got to understand, when you're like us community servants, no one will ever stop you from helping them. You have to stop yourself. And that's what I mean by that. So many of us, we work past fatigue, again, for that affirmation. It's hard to say no. And that's one of the greatest things I've learned to master is saying no. I can always come back to say yes, but when I say yes first, now I'm committed to something, and then I'm typically operating in frustration. And so now when a strong man tells you he's tired, believe it, and then do something about it to help him rest and recover. If not, just like an athlete, Kevin Durant, for instance, when he went back too soon after the injury.
That's right.
We go right back out after someone gets killed in our family. We expect life to be normal. My mother passed in 2016. I expect just to forget it and keep moving, and it still crushes my heart to this day. No, it takes time. And as brothers, we and sisters, we need to be patient and loving and understanding. And grieving is a lifelong process. Healing is a lifelong process. And as we always say, there's no point of arrival. It's a constant state of evolving, becoming better, becoming better.
And so, you know, it takes me to something, right? And one of the things it takes me to, is I listened to Judge Lynn Toler, right? And for those of you who don't know, Judge Lynn Toler was a celebrity judge, television talk show host, but she was also a judge in real life, right? And one of the things that she talked about, and I just want to give you the background, give her her props, right? Because, you know, I loved watching her show. She's a beautiful sister, you know, and And she lived in Philadelphia. She got educated in Philadelphia for a little while at the University of Penn. All right. But one of the things that she did recently, and it's within the last year or so. And she was on, I think that this particular clip I'm going to play for you is actually longer than a year ago. This particular clip I'm going to play for you was maybe a few years ago, right? And, I want y'all to hear, this is her, you know, talking about, you know, giving her husband his roses, right? This is Lynn Toler giving her husband his roses. So I want y'all to take this in for a second. I want y'all to catch this real quick. All right. You know, the technical stuff always throws me off because you can only do it so much at a time.
I married a 6'1" bottle of Valium. I don't care what you do. You can't rattle him. You can't make him raise his voice. You can't upset him. He's just cool. I mean, I can do the most bizarre stuff and he'll just kind of look at me. But he won't do nothing. One time I was going through a thing, and I called him up in the middle of the day, and he was working, and I said, "Babe, things ain't right here." Mm-hmm. And he came home and stood there and said, he didn't know what to say. And I'm talking, and I'm telling, and I'm crying, and this and that. And he stayed until I said, "Okay, I'm fine." He said, "If you need me again, I'll come back." Mm. That brother.
Okay. And I want y'all to really, you know, take heed to that, right? Because she was talking about him, you know, this was her actually talking about him after he died. And all of the comments that I read regarding this particular situation spoke to how, you know, how great it was, how great a man it was that his wife would pay tribute to him in such a way. And it sort of like, it raised her up. And I'm not saying that it shouldn't have. What I'm also saying is that he lived to be 71. And from what we understand from what's been released publicly, you know, he had been dealing with the illness for some time. And we don't know the illness, but he had been dealing with the illness for some time. This is Judge Toler. This is Judge Toler after. Hold on. I have to exit out of here. Find the other one. This was Judge Toler the day. What the hell? Okay, so I can't, for whatever reason, it didn't upload. But I had another clip. But I'm going to explain to you. Judge Toler talked about the day she received the news that her husband had died. And the day she had received the news that her husband had died, day she received the news her husband died, he had she was called to the hospital and told that her husband was in the emergency room, and they did not give her any more information. They came to the emergency room and the nurse wouldn't give her any information. They immediately called the doctor because only the doctors can deliver that information. But she had already known that her husband was dead. And I want to talk about that because as you heard the last clip, she had spoke about how she would just bring all of these emotions to her husband. How nothing would shake him, nothing would rattle him. She even alluded to the fact that she tried to see what would shake that man. And they were married for 33 years. So they were together longer than that. In 33 years, can you imagine the amount of emotional labor that her husband had to endure to keep her sane and to protect the integrity of their marriage. Not one time, she said, did he ever raise his voice or lose his cool. And you just heard the last brother, right? And I wish I had his name. But you heard what that brother said about when men are tired. And let me tell you something. We don't have a lot of places to go when we're tired. We just don't. When we're tired, we're told to be strong. We're told that, and that's, you know, what drove me to do, because I wasn't even going to do this show tonight. I'll be perfectly honest with you, because I am freaking tired. My God, am I tired. You know, I've been working, you know, and burning a candle at both ends for, you know, quite some time. And this entire calendar year has been just nonstop. And I've been working, and I'm not complaining about that. There's people out there that can't find work. And my work, it's not just the type of work you get paid for. But, you know, there's love with the labor. But you heard the brother when he was speaking to the fact that as black men, he said men, but he was talking about as black men. Black men are 3 to 4 times more likely to successfully commit suicide, take their lives, you know, self-delete. And the reason why is because even though women, you know, make more attempts, men typically use more lethal methods when it comes to taking their lives. So they'll, a man will jump off of a building. A man will, you know, put a gun to his head, put a gun in his mouth and pull the trigger. More surefire ways of getting it done. And sometimes a lot of men who don't have anywhere to go, this is what they do. A colleague of mine, for 10 years, we worked together at a school here in Philadelphia, CEP, Community Education Partners. He literally took his life, you know, a few months back. And this man was running a new school. He was owed millions of dollars by the state and by the city. And he wasn't given the proper money to function and run his school. And the stress just took him out. The tragic irony is I hadn't seen this man in years. I hadn't seen this man close to a decade. Last time I saw him was greetings, hugs, you know, smiles, and, you know, keep pushing, black man. And, you know, to see him take his life was tragic. But when I saw him, he was walking down the street, because I'm at, you know, where I'm at, and his school was close by, so it's not uncommon or wouldn't have been unlikely for us not to bump into each other. And when I saw that man walking past, it was like ominous. It was almost like seeing a ghost. And then later on, we found out he took his life. Now, I want to speak to something else too, right? And, you know, I have dear family and friends. And it was funny because I just saw my sister early, and she told me to make sure I got some rest today. I said, yeah, good luck with that. But my I have a friend, right? A good sister. She's in the movement. And let me just tell you, this sister has been one of the, if not the most supportive person to me. This sister loves me. Do you understand me? This sister has so much care for me and concern for me. I want to really make that point clear, because we correspond, you know, and we message each other every once in a while. And this, you know, for those of you trying to, no, it's not that type of relationship. This is like a true sister to me. And you know, she had asked me, how was I doing? And typically, I don't really offer that unless somebody asks, because, you know, it's heavy. I do counseling. I know it's heavy. Take that on, so I don't just offer that. But I told her, I said, you know, I'm feeling stretched a little thin. And she sent me probably one of the most encouraging messages I had ever received. I mean, you could tell she put her heart into it. And that's why I really want to emphasize this, that this sister loves me. She cares about me. There's nothing malicious about my sister, and I know this. But at that time, I couldn't really receive the message because I was tired. And I don't want anybody to worry. I'm not at the place where I'm talking about, like, you know, wanting to go to sleep and not wake up. I'm not there. I'm nowhere near there. But it also has a different effect on your health when you're tired. Your cortisol, cholesterol levels go up. They tend to, that's not the type of cholesterol you could typically burn off, because that type of cholesterol clogs your pores. It clogs your veins and your arteries. It clogs your muscles like your heart. It compounds the, you know, fatty tissues or fatty acids around the stomach, and you can't just work that off. And that leads to a lot of health issues for us. So, you know, I want to reach out to all the brothers that are out there that are actually at this point. And sisters too, man, because I do love, I have a genuine love for our women. That's why I can speak to you in truth, even if it makes you hate me. If you're better because of it, I'm not concerned about the animosity you might feel towards me. My concern is for us all to win. But if you're at that point, as the brother said, we have to learn how to say no. We have to learn to make our health a priority. Not just our physical health, but our mental health, our spiritual health. Because one of the things that happens is that when you get to this point, a lot of times you feel the walls closing in on you. You have no idea how many times I talk to brothers and they say, man, my chest is just heavy right now. And the reason their chest is heavy right now is because they're trying to thug it out. Alpha their way out. They're trying to be strong because everybody else needs them to be strong. And you have to recognize that. And you have to offer some respite to that brother, to that sister. Offer them a break. Offer them some help and assistance. Our lives can't always be about what benefits us. Sometimes we have to make a sacrifice to help somebody else in need, especially if we can afford to. I was listening to Country Wayne, who also happened to be on the Shannon Sharp show. If I ever get on Shannon Sharp show, I'm going to ask him about that name. Like, how the hell did you come up with Club Shay Shay? I'm going to ask him about that. You know what I'm saying? But, because but he said something that, because Shannon Sharp was like, you know, you financially, you're taking care of everybody in your family. And he said, well, maybe I'm God's blessing to my family. And that's something that we carry, a lot of us. But at the same time as the blessing, you have to also understand, people need to recognize that you're their blessing. And they need to give you some respite. Give you something in return for your blessing. Offer them a place to lay their head. Offer them minutes. Because he said something else too. Now, this is not something I totally agree with, but I understand what he said. He said, you know, he'd rather a woman be into him for his money than into him. Because if she's into him, she wants his time, and he can't afford to give her his time, because his time is his most precious resource. Time is our most precious resource. And if we play around with it, we will lose time to be around, to see our children get older, to welcome grandbabies into the world, to become godparents, godgrandparents, and to also be the light at the end of the tunnel that our people need to follow. So I appreciate y'all time tonight, man, and I thank y'all for tuning in. You know what I'm saying? Tonight was a little different. You know what I mean? Tonight was a little more somber because I really wanted to drive this message home. This is on my spirit to have this conversation with you, family. You know, I can deal with the foolery and things of that nature, but at this point, we need to evolve the conversation. We need to really talk about things that matter. And so that's sort of the direction I want to take office hours into. So I thank y'all all for pulling up tonight. I appreciate y'all. And, you know, I want to thank you. And, you know, it's a token of my appreciation. You know, give y'all a round of applause, you know. Y'all sat through it. So I appreciate y'all. And with that said, war and peace, family. Because like I always say, if you want peace, you better be willing to wage war for it. All right, Lester, take us home, good brother.